Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Talking Eds, presented by students of International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, Cohort 2. I'm Aibanu from Xinjiang, China, your host for the day. Today our topic is critical and radical education. I hope you will enjoy your listening with us. Here we have Yumi and Marie producing this episode, and two other guests, Kelly and Lauren from IMAS Group, with us today as well.
Radical critical pedagogy has been the main theme in adult education for social change. Many radical educators would hold an opinion that radical education, which involves action, is necessary in leading future social changes to tackle existing social issues. But due to such reasons, the image of being radical also often implies being aggressive. Being critical educators, this side of radical education is also worth criticizing. Should learners be offered more freedom in their learning process, where certain pressure is also needed? Can we rely on the automatic changing of society, or particular groups of people have to take the role of leading changes? Is there any overlapping parts between radical education and humanistic education? And does either pedagogy can make utopian vision of future come true? Today we will discuss about those questions. And Mary, I remember in one of the previous episodes when we were talking about motivation of educators, you called yourself a radical educator. Since we're going to talk about radical education today, why don't you start with telling us a bit what is critical pedagogy and what features does it have?
Hello, everyone. And yes, Yumi, you are right. I was talking about that. Just to help listeners to get a better idea, I would just mention a few philosophical dimensions in education, which are liberal, progressive, behaviorist, humanist, and radical. I want to specify that radical education and critical education are synonyms. But I agree that whenever people hear the radical, they get confused and they have association that is aggressive. Mm-hmm. But we will try today to make it a bit clear and not to have at least idea that is aggressive. So what it means to be a critical educator and what is the main goals of it? Critical pedagogy stresses the role of education as a means of bringing main social change. And the education is used to address social, political and economic oppression within society. The significant feature that is clear for everyone is that critical education is definitely against neoliberal discourse and tries to raise awareness about reality in order to understand the power relationship and take actions against it. So it's both together, what is called praxis in critical pedagogy. So critical education addresses inequality between classes as well. And the word radical itself, which is very important to define what does it mean, it mm-hmm. means the roots. So the main goal of critical pedagogy and radical pedagogy is to find the root causes of the different social problems.
So you would say the essential goal of critical education is to dig out the initial reasons of existing issues. But is this the goal for educators or for learners? And what exactly do they need to do to achieve this goal?
Yeah, that's a really good question, since it's very important for educators to be clear what is their goal and to be clear what kind of learners they're producing. As for critical pedagogy, the main goal is definitely social change. The role of teacher or facilitator is to be a liberator, and learners are modern activists. Class different, again, is the main focus for learners and for educators as well. So, as I already said, critical pedagogy produces the learners who care about the root causes of social injustice and are able to connect local problems to the global aspects.
This sounds still a bit abstract to me because I don't quite understand what do you mean by liberator. And can you maybe give a specific example or details on what do critical educators look like in a classroom?
So Yumi, that's a really challenging question, I think. And it's very difficult to draw the straight lines, but I will try to mention some like features that are usual for critical educators. First of all, they should not be afraid to bring political, social and economic aspects into discussion, and they should be able to link them in every topic learners are studying. It's crucially important for educators to be able to see a big picture, because it's not only the micro level classroom. Micro is connected to the macro level aspects happening in all over the world. So I don't see the role of educator as a neutral person, and this is the core value as well. I believe that one should be able to express their understanding of relevant topics openly with the group. At the same time, I don't see the role of educator as someone who is positioning themselves as knowing the only truth. And my observation here is that nowadays teachers more like to call themselves facilitators because it's kind of a trendy name. Also, an educator should be able to let learners see the many different ways, perspectives, and let them choose the way they feel is right. And here is the risk that maybe the learner will choose the so-called wrong way or so-called wrong perspective. So what then? This is the question. Well, that's not obviously good. However, if learners follow the way which is transferred to him or her by the way of influence, this may sooner or later will end up with collapse. And what I mean by collapse. This is what happens when collectives are failing. Here I am a bit generalizing. They fail because individuals in collectives were strongly influenced when they were educated. One day they will feel that it was not the way of life they wanted to have. So to avoid this risk, it's important to show them many different perspectives, let them know which one you as educator consider to be right, and after, leave them alone, and I think there is no role of educator left anymore. Mm. I can also give one example. For example, how the critical pedagogue would ask a question. We all know the immigration in Europe is a huge problem. So critical educators would not only ask students why immigrants are not integrated, but they would encourage students to think about what are the causes of immigration. So here is where the root causes come in. Yeah,
I think this is a very good example, but I don't really agree with you in one point. I don't think there is a right or wrong perspectives in education. Individuals always have their own reasons or their own rights to choose what to believe. But I do agree with you that as educators, we always need to help learners to discover more possibilities and different perspectives in life. And at the same time, we have to be clear that such a learning process doesn't offer us lessons to push learners to choose whichever way that we want them to choose. And Lauren, I think you have quite long experience teaching English as a second language in Asia. What would you say is the principles of critical pedagogy you can use in everyday classroom settings?
So actually, in English language teaching, there is a big focus on student-centered learning. And there is a history of English language teaching and critical pedagogy overlapping. For me, I wouldn't say I've mostly worked for private language schools, so they didn't really encourage us to be critical educators. In fact, I've had previous employers tell me not to involve politics in the classroom at all. So I don't know if it would be an example of critical education.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I can relate to that, Lauren, as well, because normally the institutions are not open to include the political perspectives in their work because they think that, oh, we are political, we don't have anything to do with politics. Mm. So it's really common. And I want to mention one more role of critical educators, which is outside of classroom role. And the role of educator as a socially active person means that we should not remain neutral and silent in the face of any social problems. Mm-hmm. And educators must make their voice heard in teachers' organizations, the media, the neighborhood and communities, political frameworks and the social organizations. So that's not only the classroom where the teachers should bring their voice.
Yeah, exactly.
They should speak up at the level of institutions as well, but strategically.
Yeah.
For
exactly,
sure.
I agree. I think you have to be strategic in that mm-hmm. situation.
This role sounds quite reasonable and also a bit aggressive to me, which reminds me of another pattern of education that you mentioned before, humanistic education. So can you maybe compare learners of critical pedagogy and humanistic education? And what are the main characteristics of humanistic learners?
Well, there are many principles in humanistic education that is similar in critical pedagogy. However, the main difference is that it's over-individual oriented. The learners of humanistic education would easily survive in the 21st century because they can individually deal with challenges. They are self-directed, self-planners, self-managers, and competitive in market. The only thing they would blame in case of failure is themselves and not the power system or class related reasons. And this is the point which makes me sad very often, because people normally blame themselves, saying that, oh, we are not good enough, we are doing well. And it creates some stress in people and they can't deal with it. I would say that humanistic education produces learners suitable for 21st century, which is global, technologically diverse and competitive. Educators and policymakers are focused to adjust the curriculum to the existing situation in order to adapt to current demand. And this for me definitely means reproducing the system and social reproduction. There are scholars of who are doing a lot of research about self-regulated learning, and they directly say that in order to achieve success in 21st century, it's important to promote self-regulated learning. I assume that learners of humanistic education are people who can deal with the challenges of 21st century neoliberal discourse and those who are able to plan, implement their life with less attention to social aspects. So that's what I mean by saying that they are over individual oriented. And critical education does not have anything against the personality and individuality. It's about, it says that it's just over individual oriented, which is lacking the social aspects. Such individuals are believed to be necessary for economic growth. So that's why they are producing, the current mainstream education are producing them. Global competition, efficiency, productivity, and innovation. And in short, current education are producing the learners for corporations, for big corporations.
Thank you, Mary. Welcome back to the 15th episode of Talking S. Today we're talking about the issues of radical education. We started off by illustrating what is radical pedagogy and its features. And Mary also provides some insights about humanistic education. Based on the image that Mary just described of what a humanistic learner should look like, I would say it's probably a bit too good to be true that we can find all those good features on one specific person, compared to finding one particular perfect idol to illustrate humanistic education. Perhaps it's more practical to talk about some common practice that can be regarded as part of humanistic education. And Kelly, what kind of performance or behavior do you think would be recognized as humanistic education?
Well, hi Yumi and everyone listening. I think this is a really good question and one that many people have tried to answer over the years. With the topic of today being about radical education, and I can actually see some parallels between radical and humanistic in the sense that my interpretation of humanism is one that sees a human situated in a whole environment. So a humanistic educator would actually kind of look at a big picture and they would really try to see the relationship between things. So this is where there's maybe some crossover, and it can lead both kinds of educators to really look for the connections and the causes between things. And I'd say that perhaps the most usual behavior of a humanistic educator is that they often tend to be quite pragmatic. Often you'll find that maybe action researchers or community development workers, they will often take a pragmatic approach to education. So by that, I mean that they will respond or adapt to a reality. I mean, this is where the problem might come in as well. That's, you know, are they reproducing things or, you know, adapting that word? You know, what does that mean? What do we mean by adapting to reality?
I think combining reality to their learning process is definitely beneficial to their learning. But can you explain more in details on what advantages it can offer to learners?
I think the most obvious main advantage of this kind of approach is that the education that's promoted is perceived as relevant. So as we know, one of the key principles of effective adult education is that it must be relevant and be seen as immediately useful or, you know, useful in a visible, imaginable future. But the challenge then, of course, is how to translate being relevant in the present that you meet someone, how to translate being relevant into a hopeful, perhaps more radical vision for future action and social transformation, rather than, you know, simply reproducing the system. And by that, we already said, we mean the neoliberal capitalist system that I personally believe has created a very unequal and unjust world. Sadly, I'm not sure this is something I believe a humanistic educator has the power, or should have the power, to control fully. So if we embrace the humanistic belief that learners are fully human subjects, able to shape their learning and their actions in the world, the educator must accept that their hope may not be realised, at least not in the way they wish or according to the time frame they wish. We must also deliver in a way that truly increases learner self-efficacy. And by that I mean that their belief in their own abilities, so that they can say to themselves, yes, I can do that, or we can do that. So as educators, I think this means that we need to be humble. For one, we might have influence, but we're not going to change everything. Maybe that seems negative, but I don't think we are going to change everything. But that doesn't mean that we can't try. And this is where we must also be patiently impatient. And I think we have to kind of accept and embrace learners' ability to shape things according to their values, their principles, what they see as relevant. But I also agree with Mari that, you know, this doesn't mean that an educator has to be a neutral presence. You are human too, as an educator. So I think, you know, merely fulfilling a technical role isn't really what I would encourage any kind of educator to do. But at the same time, we accept the limitations of what can be achieved. You know, we accept with some humility that we might influence things, but we can't control or dictate, you know.
I think being influential is already a quite big goal to do. And being influential is definitely more important than controlling. And controlling other people shouldn't be a role or being a goal for us to do. And it shouldn't be a compromise that we choose to influence other people. But it should be an original goal. Otherwise, this pedagogy is easily to go beyond the boundaries and generate oppression, which is not the thing that we want. And as a radical educator, can you maybe analyze a bit disadvantages of humanistic education?
I think, firstly, maybe I can respond to you identify me as a radical educator, and maybe I am. I'm not entirely sure. I suppose this is the question we're all asking ourselves now.
I think Mary is quite sure that she's a radical educator.
Yeah, but I just want to say that I mostly use the term critical educator instead of radical, so that not frighten people, because they have the, as you said from the beginning, the wrong, like the different associations, not really nice when they hear the word radical. So this is what we say, being strategic and use the critical educator instead of I am radical educator. So I personally prefer to be identified as critical.
I personally like the idea of using the word humanistic, because I think, although obviously if you go into the theories of things, you can really get into a lot of detail. I think perhaps the general impression of, you know, your general person on the street is that humanistic maybe is a bit easier to understand as well, in the sense that it just sounds human. But anyway, going back to the question you asked. So
disadvantages of humanistic education?
Right, yes. So this made me think about actually something Lauren mentioned about the student-centered learning. A kind of related idea is self-directed learning. And certainly there are advantages to this approach. So, for example, it can encourage creativity, personal responsibility, and maybe a bit of self-confidence, among other things. But I do agree that over-dependence on this approach in education can contribute to this culture that I'm seeing in current lifelong learning discourse. It's becoming very, very individualised. And there's a lot of responsibility placed on individual learners. So I think that is a concern, and educators should be conscious of that potential harm. But I'd say that a style of working I've found effective in my work, I've worked previously, well, and now with homeless young people. I was working in Scotland for a homeless charity there for a couple of years, and we often combined self-directed learning methods with scaffolding across a course that would last a few weeks or months. So I'd say this was quite effective, because if you depend only on peers in group learning situations, this wouldn't have encouraged learners to believe in their own abilities. They would have only looked to each other for examples and not really pushed themselves, I don't think. the use of personal learning plans and other kind of tools was helpful for us as educators, because it kind of was a sort of needs assessment. And it was also really good for the learners as a reference point, and we could look back and see how far they'd actually come. And they owned that, you know, that was something they had done from day one, especially in our context. So the learners, they'd been self-reliant for so long. They'd had a very kind of survivalist mentality, you know, living on the streets had led to, you know, survival of the fittest kind of thing. And so the self-directed element actually showed that we as educators respected their ability to do things and to know things. And so I would say it kind of, you know, the what's the catchphrase, like, you meet someone where they are. We, you know, that was an example of where that self-directed element was helpful. I'd say it also gave them opportunity to express hopes and to think forward in time in a way that they weren't used to doing. You know, that's a life skill, to be able to plan and to set goals. Mm-hmm. And actually, given the social context they were living in, it was quite radical, because it was a way that we were encouraging them to dare to hope and to believe in themselves. And so I would say that this was the beginning of any transformation that later happened. But that didn't work on its own. The scaffolding element was necessary, and it allowed for newer and maybe less confident people to identify with peers. And it allowed for more experienced people to put into practice their newly developed skills. Mm-hmm. So each person became a kind of role model for each other. And I would say that this combination of scaffolding and self-directed learning encouraged both individual and social accountability.
That's actually something that I can kind of relate to criticism education. But of course, when we're trying to be critical educators, we always need to criticize both humanistic education and critical education. Mary, what would you say is the criticism weakness of critical pedagogy? Is there any part that is similar to what Kelly just described?
The first thing that comes in my mind is that I like when people say that leftists are the new class. Mm. And sometimes I can relate it to the critical pedagogy, and that's elitist. It may sound ironic, but nowadays to be critical in many cases is a privilege. Because if we ask ourselves, who are the people protesting and asking for change? Mostly they are educated middle class, people who are ready to speak up because they don't have to strive to meet everyday basic needs. And indeed, this is great. Critical educators should maintain this discourse of making change, but at the same time, they should be aware how privileged they are and why they are critical and why other people are not critical. So this is something very important that they should not forget. So that's a kind of challenge. So another thing that comes to my mind is the definition of emancipation. So many scholars are criticizing critical pedagogues, saying that you are emancipating people. So it means that you are assuming you are emancipated. But how critical philosophy explains this is that, for example, the Freire's perspective is that the emancipation is a process. So it's not kind of that you are emancipated and it's finished. So this is the challenge where our critical educators should be able to explain this terminology. Yeah, that's so far. That's in my mind.
Yeah, I agree, Mary. And another problem that I've seen in critical pedagogy is sometimes there's this rhetoric of striving for a change and hoping against something like neoliberalism. But rather than thinking about hoping against something or changing from something, always thinking like, well, what are we hoping for? What's the change that we want to see? Is there a concrete vision of what we want that is an alternative to neoliberalism? So one book that I've read recently is called Envisioning Real Utopias by Eric Olin Wright. And in this book, he used a process of dialogue to come up with real alternatives to neoliberal capitalism, not just how can we go against neoliberal capitalism. And he published every draft online, and you can even find the final draft of this book online for free. And in this idea of utopian pedagogy, it would be the goal to have some sense of the real utopian models and finding a way that dialogue can emerge from wider sections of the community. One example that I like in this book is the idea of universal basic income, which has been in the news a lot recently, which has the goal of giving each person money each month to live on, like a living wage for free, but also in addition to current welfare provisions too. And this could have a profound impact on the ways in which people can engage with adult education, because it gives you that economic freedom. It's also got a lot of other interesting examples too.
But is it that realistic to even carry an experiment on this theory?
Yeah, actually, at the moment, they're doing an experiment on UBI right now in Finland. They're paying some unemployed people every month money for free and seeing if they find additional work or do some creative things with it. It was also proposed as a possibility by the Scottish National Party recently. So it will be interesting to see how this research works out.
That's interesting.
I want to now kind of conclude this whole conversation by mentioning one more principle of critical pedagogy, which is political awareness and political and ideological clarity of educators, which is very important for critical pedagogy. It might sound difficult to be politically aware all the time, since it requires the constant process of investigation in the ongoing political process, and being politically clear is not the universal phenomenon. And I like the approach of the scholar, who is Lilia Bartolome from US, who says that being politically aware and have the political clarity is an ongoing process, so it's not static, because it's kind of the same as praxis, as a never-ending action-reflection process that is to increase their understanding of the political and ideological dimensions of education. So to be politically clear and ideologically clear is not something static. Once again, it's because people are always afraid to, when you are asking them, are you, what's your political stance? So for adult educators, it's important to be aware about ongoing important processes in the world and being able to connect this to the classroom setting. So at the end, I want to mention three important aspects that is mentioned in the critical pedagogy literature of critical pedagogy that adult educators should take in mind. So that's our confronting and over-focus on self and reconnecting it to the social context, recognizing the reality of power and conflict, but without losing the concept of individuality and interdependence. And third, being aware of existential dilemmas that may arise when putting theory into practice. So that's not only for critical pedagogues, it's like universal, I think. So that's all for today. Thanks everyone for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Today we have discussed a lot about radical education and humanistic education, and I hope this episode will offer a new perspective to our listeners. I'd like to thank our guests Kelly and Lauren again to be with us today. Thank you all for listening to our program. This is the end of our program for today. Goodbye and see you next time.